This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Welcome to Military Times. My name is Mark Love, and our first article comes from the front page of Military Times, dated May 7, 2025. Trump proclaims Thursday as day for U.S. to celebrate victory in World War II. President Donald Trump has issued a proclamation designated Thursday as a day for the United States to celebrate victory in World War II, as countries in Europe already do. Cities from London to Moscow are holding parades, flyovers, and memorials this week as the world observes Thursday, 80th anniversary of the Victory in Europe Day, when Nazi Germany surrendered to Allied forces, including the U.S. Here's what to know about Trump's plans. What is Trump doing and why? The Republican president is designating specific days on the U.S. to celebrate being on the winning side in World War I and World War II. He complained in recent social media posts that Americans don't spend enough time celebrating those achievements, which he said wouldn't have been possible without the U.S. Many of our allies and friends are celebrating May 8th as Victory Day, but we did more than any other country by far in producing a victorious result on World War II. I am hereby renaming May 8th as Victory Day for World War II and November 11th as Victory Day for World War I, he said last week on social media. We won both wars. Nobody was close to us in terms of strength, bravery, or military brilliance. But we never celebrate anything. That's because we don't have leaders anymore that know how to do so. We are going to start celebrating our victories again. Can Trump rename an existing federal holiday? No, November 11th is already Veterans Day, a federal holiday in the U.S., and only Congress can create, rename, or take it back. That could explain why Trump backed away from his renaming plan and said he'd instead be declaring national holidays instead. We won two wars, world wars, but we never took credit for it. Everyone else does. All over the world, the Allies are celebrating the victory we had in World War II. The only country that doesn't celebrate it is the United States of America, and the victory was only accomplished because of us, he wrote Monday on social media. Without the United States, the war would have been won by other countries, and what a different world it would be. Therefore, I am hereby declaring a national holiday in celebration of the victories of World War I, where the armistice was signed on November 11, 1918, and World War II, where the victory date was May 8, 1945. He signed a proclamation on Wednesday that designated May 8, 2025 as a day in celebration of Victory Day for World War II. He expected to issue a similar proclamation for World War I later this year. Is Thursday a day off from work? No, Thursday is not a federal holiday, and therefore not a day off from work. Only Congress can create federal holidays, and Trump has complained that there are already too many of them. What does he envision will happen around the U.S. on those days? It's unclear. Trump didn't say that he envisioned happening, and the proclamation didn't include any details. But he said during an unrelated appearance Wednesday in the Oval Office that he noticed France and other countries were all getting ready for Victory Day. We don't celebrate it. And I think that's a great disservice, Trump said. What happens in other countries? On major anniversaries like this year's 80th, Britain celebrates VE Day with parades, airplane flyovers, and memorials. The British royal family traditionally watches the airplanes pass overhead from a balcony at Buckingham Palace. Russia celebrates on Friday, and its Victory Day parade are a massive show of its armed forces, with thousands of troops, scores of heavy equipment rolling across Red Square, and flyovers involving dozens of warplanes, military parades, fireworks, and other festivities are held in cities across the country. What have veterans groups said about Trump's plans? Rob Kulcher, director of public affairs for the Veterans of Foreign Wars, said they are encouraged by any steps that bring attention to the service of veterans from that time. Just over 66,100 of the 16.4 million Americans who served in World War II were alive as of 2024. In our next article, DOD educator unions sue Trump over collective bargaining rights, dated May 7, 2025. Unions representing thousands of educators in Department of Defense education activity schools have filed a lawsuit challenging President Donald Trump's executive order excluding certain federal workers from the right to collective bargaining. The lawsuit filed Monday in U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia argues Trump's executive order issued on March 27 violates the First and Fifth Amendment rights of educators and their unions. The complaints contend the executive order and its implementation are an abuse of authority by Trump and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. In addition to Trump and Hegseth, the Defense Department and Charles Ezel, acting director of the Office of Personnel Management, are named as defendants. Trump's executive order excludes agencies and agency subdivisions from coverage under a federal labor management statute if their primary function is in intelligence, counterintelligence, investigative, or national security work. As states, the law's provisions cannot be applied to that agency or subdivision in a manner consistent with the national security requirements and considerations. In effect, the executive order removed collective bargaining rights from about two-thirds of the federal workforce. DODEA educators provide military-connected families with a world-class education, and they deserve to be respected and honored for their high levels of achievement, not have their rights taken away and their academic freedom trampled upon, Federal Education Association Executive Director Richard Tarr said in an announcement of the complaint. The Federal Education Association, Federal Education Association Stateside Region, and Antilles Consolidated Education Associations are plaintiffs in the lawsuit. Other unions have filed lawsuits related to the executive order. A federal judge recently temporarily blocked Trump's executive order as it applies to the National Treasury Employees Union, which represents over 150,000 federal bargaining unit employees in 33 departments and agencies. But the Defense Department was not named as a defendant in that lawsuit, so it isn't directly bound by the judge's order, sources said. FEA, an affiliate of the National Education Association, represents more than 5,400 educators and education support professionals in DODEA-operated schools. Those schools serve more than 64,000 children in pre-K through 12th grade of military and civilian personnel stationed in the U.S., U.S. territories, and overseas. The Antilles Union represents educators in four DODEA schools located in Puerto Rico. The plaintiffs seek preliminary and permanent injunctions to block the government from implementing the executive order and OPM guidance with respect to FEA. Or, if that relief isn't granted, the plaintiffs ask the court to direct Hegseth to address the questions of whether it's warranted under law to suspend the executive order as it applies to DODEA. Hegseth took action to preserve collective bargaining for a subset of employees and four other DOD subdivisions, the lawsuit says. Trump's executive order doesn't just break the law, it violates the U.S. Constitution, Tarr said. The Trump administration is attacking the very people who serve this country by educating the children of our service members on military bases at homes and around the world. FEA members and other educators have used collective bargaining to advocate for student learning conditions, including smaller class sizes and more learning time, and increasing staffing of school nurses, counselors, and mental health professionals. Because of the executive order and OPM's implementation, DODEA has already effectively repudiated its obligations under the existing collective bargaining agreement that has been enforced with FEA since 2023 and was expected to be in force until August 2028, the lawsuit alleges. DODEA has canceled union dues deductions for members' paychecks, which are normally labor organizations' primary source of income. DODEA also has stopped participating in any grievance proceedings that have come up or were pending before the executive order. FEA has been prosecuting grievances on behalf of more than 800 educators who seek relief from DODEA because of DODEA's chronic failure to correctly calculate their overseas employees' pay, the lawsuit alleges. These grievances were pending in various stages of the arbitration process. In cases involving nearly 500 employees, arbitrators have already issued decisions in favor of employees and order DODEA to make payments of back pay and interest, but DODEA has yet to make those payments, the lawsuit alleges. In our next article, Army Black Hawk pilot found dead in Honduras, dated May 7, 2025. An off-duty U.S. Army Black Hawk pilot was found dead in Honduras on Saturday, according to a Joint Task Force Bravo release. First Lieutenant Marciano Parasano, 25, of Cibolo, Texas, was off base on a Liberty Pass when his body was found in Comayagua, a city in west central Honduras. Parisano was assigned to 1st Battalion, 228th Aviation Regiment at Soto Cano Air Base. It is with profound sadness and heavy hearts we acknowledge the passing of Lieutenant Marciano Parisano, said U.S. Army Colonel Daniel Alder, Joint Task Force Bravo Commander, in the release. He served on a unit and mission here at Soto Cano Air Base with dignity, pride, and courage. An investigation into the circumstances surrounding Parisano's death is ongoing, officials said. Local authorities have ruled out robbery as a contributing factor, according to the Spanish newspaper El País. After Parisano's body was found, authorities scoured the area for 2 hours and located a partially destroyed cell phone purportedly owned by Parisano. The cell phone showed signs of potential fire damage, El País reported. As a UH-60 Black Hawk pilot with the 228th Aviation Regiment, Parisano's contribution to our team is immeasurable, Alder said. We will be deeply missed by all who had the privilege to know him and serve with him. The command team extends our deepest condolences to the First Lieutenant Marciano Parisano's family, friends, and loved ones. We stand with you in this time of grief. One soldier lost is too many. And in our next article, more data, comms, countermeasures needed for special ops aircraft, dated May 7th, 2025. From Tampa, Florida, special operators are looking to industry for a suite of upgrades to their fixed-wing aircraft, such as radio frequency countermeasures, new methods for air refueling, and improved networking. At the annual Global SOF Foundation Special Operations Forces Week, Special Operations Command officials who develop aircraft share these and other updates that are needed from its largest to smallest platforms. For one key platform, the MC-130J Combat Talon III, operators envision the aircraft as a nexus in a battlefield, connecting the lowest level operator on the ground with space, air, and even commands in the homeland. To do that, the MC-130J will need some new capabilities. They are currently testing terrain following and avoiding technology that includes dynamic retasking. They'll also need networked data from the aircraft systems to work with satellite communications, radio signals, data links, and data fusions across multiple platforms. On the opposite end of the spectrum, the aircraft requires upgraded radio frequency countermeasures and considerably more processing power for all of the data streaming in. New steps include a capability release that will include tactical mission route replanner technology, along with tactical flight management and defensive countermeasures, as well as embedded train systems to simulate more complex missions. Beyond those capabilities, operators are looking to extend the range and reach of the aircraft, improve its communication systems, advance its defensive systems, increase its payload capacity for diverse mission sets, and precision airdrop and landing capabilities, said Lieutenant Colonel Andrew Sturgeon, head of mobility for Program Executive Office Fixed Wing. The recently named OA-1K Sky Raider 2 is also on the program upgrade list. As SOCOM wants modular sensor payloads and weapons enhancements for their propeller-driven airplane, said Lieutenant Colonel Shauna Matthews, who heads the Integrated Strike Program. For both the Sky Raider and the AC-130J Ghost Rider, officials are looking for longer-ranging weapons systems for contested environments, air-launched loiter munitions, and collaborative weapons options, Mattis said. Across the entire strike portfolio, which touches nearly every fixed-wing platform, Mattis said those munitions need increased automation and autonomy, advanced navigation and sensing, and secure, resilient communications, along with modular payload efforts. That gives operators more options for targeting and destroying targets on various missions. For its drones, such as the MQ-9A and the MQ-1C, special operators seek hardened data links and communications, easily adaptable autonomous behavior profiles, the use of artificial intelligence and machine learning to reduce data link bandwidth requirements, and the use of autonomy for the entire kill chain, said Brandy Evans, head of Airborne Intelligence Surveillance and Reconnaissance for PEO Fixed Wing. Beginning this month, the office's Adaptive Airborne Enterprise Program will look to give operators multi-aircraft control interface software, increased survivability, and integrated autonomy onto existing systems, Evans said. For manned ISR platforms such as the U-28 and DHC-8 STAMP, officials are looking to improve sensors, integrated all-weather capabilities, and automate aspects of aircraft operation to reduce crew workload, as well as edge data processing. In our next article, night vision goggles, weather likely factors in Marine Hilo crash, dated May 7th, 2025. The crash of a Marine Corps helicopter last year that killed five service members was ultimately caused by pilot error, but the use of night vision goggles and unsafe flying conditions are also likely were factors, according to an investigation report obtained by the Associated Press. The CH-53 Super Scion crashed February 6, 2024, during a late-night flight when it hit a mountain near Pine Valley, California, on its way back to Marine Corps Air Station Miramar. Investigators found that multiple factors likely led to the crash, but as with several previous mission aviation accidents, investigators had to make some assumptions because the CH-53 was not equipped with a flight data recorder capable of surviving a crash. The limits of night vision goggles also have been identified as a potential factor in the failed collision of an Army Black Hawk helicopter and a passenger jet near the Reagan Washington National Airport in January that killed 67 people. The goggles can reduce a pilot's ability to determine distance and can be degraded by weather or light pollution. The Marine helicopter was flying in icing conditions with low cloud cover that obscured the mountainous terrain along the flight path. The crew was using night vision goggles, which likely did not give them the clear picture needed to avoid a crash into the terrain, investigators found. The precipitation and clouds probably degraded the goggles' performance and possibly gave the crew a false sense that they were maintaining the safe distances needed in the flight, investigators found. The pilot and crew chief most likely believed they were operating legally and within their comfort level, investigators found. Ultimately, though, investigators found that the pilot's failure to avoid the terrain was a primary cause of the crash. They also found that the commanding officer, who was relieved of duty due to a loss of confidence and an ability to lead, should not have given the crew approval to fly. The Super Scion vanished during the overnight flight on its way back to Miramar from Creech Air Force Base. The helicopter was discovered in the morning near the mountain community of the Pine Valley. All five Marines aboard were killed in a crash. Marine Corps Lance Corporal Donovan Davis, 21, of Olathe, Kansas. Sergeant Alec Langan, 23, of Chandler, Arizona. Captain Miguel Nava, 28, of Traverse City, Michigan. Captain Jack Casey, 26, of Dover, New Hampshire. And Captain Benjamin Moulton, 27, of Emmett, Idaho. In interviews contained in the report, multiple members of the squadron said that the crews had been stretched thin because their unit had to fly additional missions to compensate for last year's months-long grounding of the V-22 Osprey aircraft. In our next article, an opinion. I sounded the alarm on burn pits. Now I see smoke at the VA. Dated May 7, 2025. In 2008, I left Balad Air Base in Iraq with the knowledge of what I feared would be one of the signature concerns to face my generation of veterans. Though the base was nicknamed Moritaville for the daily enemy attacks, its sprawling open-air burn pit, roughly the size of 10 football fields, had the potential of causing a significant greater health hazard for the hundreds of thousands who deployed there. These perpetually smoldering burn pits were so bad that flight line operations had to be rerouted. I kept one of the base's five-day weather forecasts. It accurately predicted smoke haze for the entire week. People were already getting sick from exposures we now know will continue to cast a long shadow in terms of the illness they cause, many chronic and many fatal. That same year that I leaked a story to Kelly Kennedy with Military Times before writing it about it for the New York Times Home Fire series, our current Veterans Affairs Secretary, Doug Collins, deployed as a chaplain to Balad. There he served the spiritual needs of those who worked and were treated as the Air Force Theater Hospital. He counseled countless men and women who'd been sent into harm's way and were wounded. He prayed over those who had made the ultimate sacrifice. And like everyone else on that base, he was exposed to hundreds of tons of burning waste that America's military and civilian leaders knew could have chronic and enduring consequences to their health. Fortunately for myself, Collins, and hundreds of thousands of other veterans who had been exposed, the PAC Act was signed into law in 2022. The hard-fought legislation helped expedite justice by presuming veteran service connection for certain illnesses linked to toxic exposures. In less than 3 years since its passage, more than 2.1 million claims for benefits due to toxic exposures have been adjudicated, and more than 436,000 additional veterans are currently enrolled in VA healthcare. Although it took almost two decades for the federal government to acknowledge that veterans exposed to burn pits have been harmed, which is less than an average of 34 years it has historically taken to establish a presumptive condition for an exposure. We're getting closer than in past generations to keeping promises to the men and women who answer the call to serve. In spite of increases in demand for care and benefits, the Trump administration has used executive orders to cut the number of VA employees. Then the leak exposed plans for a reduction in force back in 2019, VA staffing levels, which was before the PACT Act provided millions of toxic exposed veterans with earned benefits. Although the how of these cuts remains a guarded mystery about which veterans have been left in the dark, we know Secretary Collins' goal is to cut around 72,000 staff members, which is 15% of the department's workforce. Among those at risk of losing their jobs are around 20,000 veterans who bring key insights into our health and benefit system. Unlike previous administrations who sought and welcomed back feedback from veteran stakeholders, the same organizations who, along with John Stewart, ultimately carried the PACT Act and other key policy victories for veterans across the finish line, the administration has offered no opportunity for public comment and scant details on its plans for a transformation. Instead, we are being promised a more efficient VA and being told repeatedly that care and benefits will not be impacted. The secretary who spoke of sleeping next to a burn pit in his confirmation hearing has asked his fellow veterans to trust him, cutting tens of thousands of positions while maintaining or even improving services for veterans in need sounds like a godsend to veterans and taxpayers alike. But we're talking about cuts at the time when the needs are on the rise and care is already being affected, with interruptions in research impacting veterans participating in cancer trials. Ultimately, we're being asked to blindly trust the same government that poisoned us over the course of generations. Many veterans are worried. Some have already been fired from the VA or other agencies, and others are service-disabled veterans with small businesses that have been devastated by cuts to government contracts. There are contracting organizations like DAV to vent their frustration and anxiety, but more is likely to come, and we weren't sure what to tell them. President Reagan's repeated mantra in nuclear negotiations was to trust but verify. The veterans community is coming out of the secretary's first 100 days with no way to verify his veracity. In the coming months, we will likely witness a sea change at the VA. But the details of how those changes will impact veterans are hazy, not unlike the downward side of a burn pit, and pair it with the lack of transparency we're experiencing at the VA, similarly concerning for the potential long-term impact to the veterans community. And in case you're just now joining us, you're listening to Military Times. In our next article, jet landing on USS Truman goes overboard forcing pilots to eject, dated May 7, 2025. An F-A-18 fighter jet landing on the USS Harry S. Truman aircraft carrier in the Red Sea went overboard, forcing its two pilots to eject, a defense official told the Associated Press on Wednesday. The incident Tuesday makes the latest mishap to mar the deployment of the Truman, which has been essential to the airstrike campaign by the United States against Yemen's Houthi rebels. On Tuesday, U.S. President Donald Trump and Oman's foreign minister both said that a ceasefire had been reached with the Houthis, who would no longer target ships in the Red Sea corridor, something not immediately acknowledged by the rebels. Meanwhile, the Houthis continue to assess damage after daytime Israeli airstrikes targeted Yemen's rebel-held capital of Sana'a. Landing goes wrong on carrier. The F-A-18 Super Hornet landed on Truman after a flight, but the arrestment failed, said the official, who spoke on a condition of anonymity because they weren't authorized to speak publicly about the incident now under investigation. Arrestment refers to the hook system used by the aircraft landing on carriers, which attaches steel wire ropes on the flight deck. It remains unclear what part of the system failed. The two pilots on board were later rescued by a helicopter and suffered minor injuries in the incident, the official added. No one on the flight deck was hurt. CNN first reported on the incident. Tuesday's incident was the latest to see the Navy lose an F-A-18, which cost about $60 million each. In April, another F-A-18 fighter jet slipped off the hangar deck off the Truman and fell into the Red Sea. The crew members who were in the pilot seat of the Super Hornet and on a small towing tractor both jumped away. In December, the guided missile cruiser USS Gettysburg mistakenly shot down an F-A-18 after ships earlier shot down multiple Houthi drones and the anti-ship cruise missile launched by the rebels. Both aviators in that incident also survived. And in February, Truman collided with a merchant vessel near Port Said, Egypt. The Truman, based out of Norfolk, Virginia, has seen its deployment extended multiple times amid the Houthi airstrike campaign. It had been joined recently by the USS Carl Vinson aircraft carrier operating out of the Arabian Sea. Rebels survey Sana'a's devastated airport. The Israeli airstrike on Tuesday that targeted Sana'a International Airport devastated the airfield. Khalid Ashif, the head of the airport, told the Houthis Al Masrara satellite news channel that the Israeli airstrike destroyed the airport's terminal and left craters in the runway. At least six passenger planes were struck, including three belonging to Yemenia Airways, the country's flag carrier carrying airline, he said. That leaves the airline with only one functional aircraft, which was spared only because it had left earlier in the day on a flight to Amman, Jordan. He put overall damage there at $500 million. With the damage, the airport was now out of service, Al-Sheikh said. Houthi attacks on shipping. The Houthis have been waging persistent missile and drone attacks against commercial and military ships in the region, with what group's leadership has described as an effort to end Israel's offensive against Hamas in the Gaza Strip. From November 2023 until January 2025, the Houthis targeted more than 100 merchant vessels with missiles and drones, sinking two of them and killing four sailors. That has greatly reduced the flow of trade through the Red Sea corridor, which typically sees $1 trillion of goods move through it annually. The Houthis paused attacks when they self-imposed ceasefire until the U.S. launched a broad assault against the rebels in mid-March. In our next article, Democrats blast Trump's pick for military personnel policy as too combative, dated May 6, 2025. Senate Democrats on Tuesday voiced continued concerns over President Donald Trump's pick to lead personnel policies at the Pentagon, casting him as a partisan firebrand who will undermine cohesion in the ranks. But Anthony Tata, who is likely to be confirmed to the senior military post despite the concerns, offered a partial apology for past attacks on Democratic lawmakers during the confirmation hearing before the Senate Armed Services Committee and promised to focus on issues like recruiting and retention in his next role. "I regret making those comments," Tata said. "I can guarantee you that if confirmed, I will be an apolitical leader that is trying to take care of the men and women in uniform, their families, and the Defense Department's civilians." Well, I'm afraid this is all the time we have for now. I'd like to thank you for joining us for Military Times. My name is Mark Love, and I hope that you'll join us next.